Today I want to talk about this idea of an Achilles heel. And a common Achilles heel that human beings have is sensitivity to criticism. So in a nutshell, the story of Achilles' heel is that Achilles was an infant and his mother wanted to protect him. And one of the ways she thought she could create invulnerability was to take this little baby and dip him into the waters of the river Styx. So she held him by the heel, dipped him into the water. His entire body was covered with the water except the place where her thumb and forefinger was touching him. And so the story goes he became a great warrior, fought a lot of battles, always victorious, until one day he was hit in the heel by an arrow, and the story says it might have been poisoned, and he died shortly thereafter. And it's this idea of having an area of vulnerability that I'm talking about today. In Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, Christ talks about our four driving needs as being ways that the ego expresses through the personality. And if the first driving need is our need to defend ourselves from criticism or emotional or physical attack, it seems reasonable to me that we would be keenly aware of criticism and any circumstances that had the potential for criticism. So, under the best of circumstances, our ego is going to be searching for the threat of criticism and guiding us to defend ourselves from it. Under more common circumstances, let's say your life and my life, criticism has probably bombarded us from the earliest days in physical life, to include during and shortly after conception, in utero, at birth, and then from that point on. So lots of people have experienced the criticism either directed at them by their mothers or directed at their mothers by their mothers to themselves or to other people, all of which just bombards us with the vibrations of criticism. You can imagine that if the seeds of criticism are planted, like seed thoughts, that's one thing. If they're planted harshly into our consciousness, that's a whole different ballgame. Then their ability to take root and grow into what I would say is like a fruit-bearing tree that is going to produce a certain fruit, I think criticism can fall into that same category. What happens is, first, I think we can learn to accept the coloration of our viewpoint. You've heard about, that person is looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, which is, somebody is criticizing them for being overly optimistic. But if we were to turn around and say, they're looking not rose-colored glasses, but include, say, gray-colored glasses or dark-colored glasses or dirt-bug-besmirched glasses, their view of life is going to be different. So if we've been criticized and it colors our view of life, ourselves, other people, then that influence is going to, I'll say, touch upon the way we view life, ourselves, the way we think about things, opportunities, other people, God, and so on. Becomes real easy after we have those kind of experiences to see the world filled with harsh criticism. Say, yep, that's reality. And we've got to defend ourselves not only from criticism that's coming at us, but the feelings that we have when we criticize. And if we're exposed to that, we're going to express criticism in a variety of ways. We criticize ourselves in various ways for various reasons. And if we plant harsh seeds of criticism, which we will do to ourselves, and unfortunately, we can even do it to our children and other loved ones, the most important people in the world, needing our nurturing and caring and protection and fulfillment of need, we habitually can use criticism that we've been filled with and directed at them. I think, too, as adults, when we start looking, and this is true of children, too, when we start looking at what we want to do, how we want to express ourselves, but because we experience criticism early on, and now we anticipate the pain of criticism, then we start living our lives by trying to protect our Achilles heel, this sensitivity, these bad feelings that come from it, and we hold ourselves back. We don't consider being or doing or having, and each one of those is with a capital letter, capital B, capital D, capital H. We don't consider being, doing, or having the greatest, the grandest, the most wondrous, the most wonderful, most inspired expressions of ourselves. But instead, we've shifted our orientation to, you know what? I need to remain safe. This is a really dangerous world, maybe exceedingly dangerous, and it's filled with all kinds of saber-toothed tigers and a lot of things, mirrors that reflect back to us, our failings, our flaws, the bad part of us, all the sinful nature and other things that we've been told that exist. And now all of a sudden we put our brakes on, we hold ourselves back, and we prevent our natural growth and fulfillment. One of the reasons I want to explore sensitivity to criticism, well, first of all, because it's real for me, but because this is a form of human suffering. People suffer when they are sensitive to criticism. People suffer when they fear criticism. So this fear of criticism, if I were to think of it in a couple of different images, could be likened to extending our own energy. I'm going to express myself mentally, emotionally, physically. I'm going to speak something. I'm going to express my idea, my opinion, or that expression of self-energy into the environment. But because of the likelihood of attracting energy in opposition, that is criticism or somebody else making us wrong, we tend to hold back. In other words, the fear of the possible harm that can come to us from the environment if we expose or express ourselves or tell people how we think or how we feel or what we have done or what we want to do. It's like, whoa, that's way too scary. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. If we think of a plant that doesn't open its buds due to the cold weather, or how about a turtle that pulls its head back into the shell at the first sign of danger in its environment? All of a sudden you go, oh yeah, that's natural, clear images of what can happen at an individual level. Well, I'm talking about a plant and I'm talking about a turtle, but the same thing happens to you and me if we fear criticism. We pull back, we retract our energy. Not only do we do it on an energetic, on a individual level, but we do it on a cellular level. Can you imagine 10 trillion cells all of a sudden pulling back like a turtle to close off to protect itself? We don't want to lose any energy. We're trying to hold on to what we have. I think that's really what can happen to us. On a regular basis, I talk about my energy model of life. Of these six things, the first one is energy acquisition. That's the first activity. And the second activity is energy preservation or protection. That is, once we acquire some energy, we want to hold on and protect it. And you can find those kind of descriptions in those four driving needs in the book Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, too. So, criticism is usually perceived as a loss or a reduction in our energy. Just imagine this for a second. If I draw a horizontal line, put a death on the far left, or even worse, non-existence, and on the far right I put life or immortality, criticism is perceived by us as a movement to the left toward death. It's like, and if it were to continue, then non-existence entirely. Our survival instincts designed into us by divine consciousness goes, I've designed these, or it has designed these instincts to prevent this downward slide. So you can see the urge to live is so amazing in people and other living things. They'll do amazing things to survive. It's designed that way. In business, I've heard this expression, and it's commonly accepted. All publicity even negative publicity is good publicity. Now, I don't know how true that statement is, but I do know that children and adults will strive for attention. That's energy acquisition. We all do it, and we do it very, very frequently, whether it's something we're eating or how we have a conversation that we're looking for positive feedback to us. That's all energy acquisition. And if children are not successful at getting positive attention, then they will often aim for negative attention, because any attention is better than no attention. Any energy is better than no energy. I was once told this by a boss, that he had submitted my name to become a sales manager in Manhattan for another sales manager who had responsibility for that area. But the other sales manager said he would never choose me to work for him. My boss told me this conversation, and I have no idea why you would pass that on to somebody, but he did. And this is how I took it. I told him, I took this as a compliment, because I held that area sales manager in very low esteem. I knew of him. I had met him a couple of times. I heard about him. I saw him in action. And I was really glad he couldn't relate to me. If a person I don't respect thought I was his kind of guy, then I would really have good cause to start to reexamine the way I expressed myself, what I said, what I did. But in fact, because somebody I didn't respect couldn't relate to me, I took that as a compliment. That story illustrates the value of understanding that criticism originates in the consciousness of the criticizer. Criticism is an expression of their energy much more than anything else. And I'll mention that again here in a few minutes. My mother had that saying in different words: consider the source. Before you grabbed hold of any energy, before you took something at face value as gospel, consider the source. And then you could recognize whether there was value in it or not. Similarly, when I talk about the 10 emotional states, a person on any of those 10 steps, in any one of those 10 energetic conditions, is going to have a different perception of life, energy, themselves, God, other people, opportunity, life itself. And somebody speaking from anger is not processing all the energy, all the information that's available. Somebody in fear or grief is not processing all the information or knowledge or energy that is available. And to accept what they're expressing as the whole truth and nothing but the truth would be a huge mistake on our part. There's another factor that I think is important in being sensitive to criticism, and there are probably lots and lots of them, but it's about me. If you had that sentence or that phrase in quotes, it's about me. That combination, it's about me and it reduces me, is what needs to be healed. Ultimately, what we want to do is get to this point where we realize that criticism doesn't have to be perceived to be a relentless saber-toothed tiger that is out to diminish us into death or non-existence. We can look at criticism as useful, helpful, life-preserving, if you want to make it about us, if you want to make it about you, or I want to make it about me. Or you can see it, if you just want to make it about the other person, is they're attempting to get back into balance. They have so much static, right? Like somebody who's built up a lot of static electricity from walking across the carpet in the wintertime in a dry day. They're trying to get back into balance, and they're eliminating some of this static from themselves by sending it outward at some object of attention. You or me or somebody else. One of our goals would be to look at criticism and look for the value of it. Look for the value in that criticism. Rather than take the whole kit and caboodle, rather than take the whole statement, we can look for the value in it. And it doesn't have to be about us, but it could be about others, it could be about life. But if we know that we're looking for value as we process information, and I believe this to be true all the time, if we were to have breakfast or lunch or dinner, we want to extract the value from the stuff that we eat. And it's not 100% valuable. It's not 100% valuable because you and I know we're going to excrete that which we can no longer use. So we'll take the value and then we'll let go of what doesn't serve us. Just think of gold mining. I remember in Panama going across the Continental Divide. I was leading an expedition of American soldiers and Panamanian soldiers, and we came across what I believe to be an 80-year-old guy who was out there mining gold in a river. And he was going through an enormous amount of pebbles and dirt in the river looking for little flecks of gold. So he was sorting through and sifting through a tremendous amount of dirt. Now, I bet if I had to calculate it, he would go through a ton of dirt to find a half ounce of gold. A ton of dirt to find a half ounce of gold. You'd go, man, oh man, he's really got to do a lot of sifting in order to find value. Yeah, he does. But I think the same thing is true of diamonds. You got to go through a lot of mud, dig through a lot of mud, a lot of mud, a lot of mud, before you come across anything that even resembles a diamond. I don't know much about pearls other than the fact that they grow in oysters. And in the natural state, they happen automatically when a piece of seed or some other irritant gets inside the meat of the oyster. And in order to deal with that irritant, nacre is produced by the oyster to cover it, and that turns into the pearl. So how many oysters does a person have to open in order to find a pearl? Plenty. And if you took a oyster and you took a pearl and you weighed them side by side, you know, there's got to be 1,000 to 1 or some similar unbelievable ratio of weight to value. That's really what life is often about. But we have the ability to be seen or to be able to sift through the criticism, the environmental signals that we're perceiving, and find the value. If I look at criticism as the addition of energy from an outside source, right? Here I am sitting here, standing here, walking here, doing that, saying this on my merry way, and now all of a sudden somebody provides energy to me. It's like, I've just acquired energy that, whoa, wait a minute, that's maybe not what I wanted. And so that energy that we acquire from an outside source could be looked upon as being disempowering. And if we said that because it would be criticism or attack, right? All geared to control, minimize, reduce our freedom, reduce our beingness or doingness or havingness. Oh, we would say, yep, that's negative, that's disempowering. Or, you know, what they said could be perceived as neutral, having no kind of energetic impact on us. You know, we're doing X and they talk about, you know, it's a nice day. It's like, yep, okay. Or oftentimes the energy that's coming from an external source delivered to us could be perceived as empowering. And we turn around and go, oh, that was supportive, that was encouraging, that was helpful, that was life-enhancing. Sure. That goes on all the time. Our processing of environmental signals in those formats. One of the things that complicates criticism, or even attack sometimes, is our degree of resistance. Now, I live in Florida. That's not where I happen to be at this moment. But in Florida, palm trees know, I put K-N-O-W in quotes, palm trees know that to rigidly resist strong winds, like a hurricane, would result in damage. So here's a concept. Palm trees have very shallow roots. And they tend to grow in, I'll say it this way, lousy soil, basically sandy soil. not nutritious like you might find where a lot of dirt in northern climates. So just think, palm trees can't hold their ground because the ground is tenuous. You can't really hold on to a handful of sand very well. If it were a clump dirt, you know, you and I could grab it in our hands and squeeze it, and we would be able to shape that. But a palm tree and their roots don't have to that capability because of the soil. So palm trees are flexible, and basically they're non-resistant. Let's consider an oak tree. Oak tree is different. It's got a greater mass. It's huge. Imagine a large building. That's what an oak tree is. Bigger trunks, bigger branches, bigger leaves, bigger everything. And you go, okay. Well, maybe not bigger leaves. Different leaves. More leaves. But that oak tree has roots in better soil, in firmer soil, and a greater network of roots. It has to hold its ground because of its size and because of its consciousness. It's designed that way. When there's a hurricane that hits up north, Long Island, for instance, or New York, or a lot of places to the north, oak trees get damaged because they stand their ground and resist. Think of this concept, stand your ground. I actually saw an email this morning about stand your ground. I forgot about this. This is a concept in Florida that legitimizes a person standing their ground and killing somebody else if they perceive the other person to be a threat to them. But that's, I'm not talking about politics or Florida or the foolishness of that law. What I'm talking about is you and I standing our ground. Earlier today, I was critical. I was thinking, that's not right, to myself about how two other people were getting ready to leave the house. I was firmly rooted to my ground of what was right, what was best, how fast things should be done, etc., etc. I was holding fast to my views of what was going to be most fun, most interesting, most expansive, most growthful for a 9-year-old girl. I thought, if she went to this farm of her aunt and saw and played with a variety of chickens in the coop where her whole group of her cousins were going to be doing the same thing, this was going to be the best thing for her. Criticism erupts from that ground of, I know what's right, I know how things should be, I know what's good and I know what's bad. Think of this. How do you and I know what's right? How do you and I know what's the best thing to do? How do you and I know what's good and what's bad? Most often, we know the right way, and I put that in quotes because that's real variable, as you can appreciate. We know the right way because we've been told or shown or criticized for doing it the wrong way. And the wrong way is also in quotes, because that's real variable. That depends on a person's perspective. If you got 10 people, you got at least 10 viewpoints and maybe way more. I talk very frequently, and already have today, about the 10 emotional states that range from the low vibration of shame up to the high vibration of peace. And there are 8 other states in between those two. And pride is one of them. I caution people and myself to notice when the internal conversation, that is our self-talk, starts to sound like this. Oh, I totally got this figured out. Oh, I know this. I have all the answers regarding this particular subject. I'm absolutely certain about fill in the blank. You have a conversation like that going on in your head? Look out. Look out. Because pride comes before the fall, literally, not just figuratively. The ground we stand on is not the only ground there is to stand on. You know, you have your points of view, I have my points of view, everybody's got their points of view, and each one of us is standing on that ground. No, this is the right way. No, that's the right way. No, this is the right way. No, that's the right way. And it is the ground that people stand on that they then convert into, no, this is my identity, my belief about these, what's right, what's wrong, my values and so on, that I'm standing on that ground, and if you don't agree with me, I consider you a threat. And I think we need to go to war just about now. That's marketed all the time to us. It's just another form of criticism. So if you hear yourself in pride, if that, I totally have this figured out, I'm right and I'm there completely wrong, or you're about to go righteous on somebody, that is a key time to go, whoop, whoop, let me hit the pause button here. Before I start ranting and raving, let me double check. Let me make sure my facts are accurate. Let me see if there's something I'm misunderstanding or not perceiving at all. That, personally, I would say, is really good advice. If we recheck our beliefs, our suppositions, our assumptions, we could be saved a lot of grief and regret, and the hurt that we deliver to other people can be minimized. So as soon as you start to hear that, I know what's right and good, and they don't, that's time for us to put the brakes on our behaviors before we say it or do it. And then we're going to save ourselves that criticism being delivered to somebody else or that attack on somebody else's beliefs or doingness. If you and I look back and we go, you know what, I've experienced a lot of criticism or a lot of wrong-making in my life. My parents were criticizing, you know, X, Y, and Z all the time, or they were criticizing you and me all the time, or somebody else in a family was criticizing you and me or somebody else all the time. We're going to be prone to criticism and judgment. We can easily habituate that. If I say this, if I pour milk into a pitcher to be used with coffee, and then a little while later I tip that pitcher and pour, guess what's going to come out? Milk is going to come out of it. If I fill a container, your consciousness, my consciousness, a child's consciousness, with criticism, guess what's going to come out when that person is tipped a little out of balance? Criticism is going to come out. And if we notice that in ourselves, this is a good opportunity for us to go, yeah, you know what? I'm going to heal this whole area, all my images, all the vibrations that I've accumulated, all my beliefs, all my experiences of being criticized and criticizing. To me, the good news is we can rise above this instinctive, habitual reaction of criticism. And the ego is going to drive us to do that. I mean, it's right, those four driving needs that defend ourselves from criticism. That's how we protect our individuality and identity. So it comes with the package. But we can rise above that, and we stop resisting so much. You know, it's like, yeah, okay. And so we don't have to be induced into that warlike, we're being attacked, I got to go into self-protection, or I've got to counterattack. We can rise above that. Here's something that's worthwhile. We can know that we don't know everything. We can know that we don't know everything. We can admit that we don't know what someone else needs for their growth, for their nurturing, for their healing, for their protection, for their fulfillment of their needs, or we don't know the rate of the rhythm with which divine consciousness is working in their lives. We go, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Like, a lot of people want to turn around and control all of that stuff. And I think it's because criticism is mainly an expression of the criticizer, if that's you or me or somebody else in our environment. It's an expression that something else, something is wrong. And the criticizer, my control is needed to make it right or keep it right or keep it good to prevent bad from happening. Control of others is a form of criticism. Control of others is a form of criticism. And it's pretty easy to see if we think we're going to control other people, the weather, business circumstances, other rhythms and natural forces that are way out of our control. If we think we're going to control them, you go, oh, this might be why people end up in frustration, in anxiety and anger and depression, and even worse. We would be so much better off aligning with the idea that everything is unfolding at its proper speed. Everything is happening the way it should, based upon the consciousnesses of the people involved. If we can learn to trust divine consciousness's intention to care for every single one of its creations, maybe we can relax, observe, and allow those habits of criticism and wrong-making and controlling efforts to fade away due to lack of use. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.